Well, now, if you're thinking about breaking out and starting your own business, listen out, as today I'm joined by a man who may very well be placed to point you in the right direction and help with that all-important launch. So first off, let me welcome Paul Durrant to Phoenix FM. So hi, Paul. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks, Scott. I'm delighted to be on the show.
Now, first off, I think I should just point out that Paul is a qualified sales coach. He's a public speaker and founder of PDT Sales Consultancy. So he pretty much knows what he's talking about. So given that you've just got a book out as well, Paul, it's entitled Entrepreneurial Sales. I take it that it's a given that it's predominantly targeted at the small business owner and entrepreneur rather than an employed salesperson per se. Is that right?
In essence, it's aimed at an early stage startup business or business owner, maybe somebody that's in their concept stage, and they're looking perhaps to have a more entrepreneurial mindset to how they're going to develop their business. But also, I do touch on the seasoned sales professional that might have the sales element to being an entrepreneurial seller, but not necessarily the entrepreneurial bit.
Right.
So I try and cover both bases there. So the book is aimed at startup business owners who just want to be on more entrepreneurial and more sales-minded, but also salespeople perhaps that want to start their own business as well.
Now, your press release emphasises that of 380,000 new businesses created each year, half of them fail within their first 5 years of trading simply through the lack of sales. Bit simplistic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. Lack of sales is certainly one of the major challenges that a lot of early stage businesses face. Mm-hmm. And there was a report generated by Lord Young maybe about 5 or 6 years ago for the government called Growing Your Business.
Yeah.
And the research from that report identified that there was four blockers that were stopping businesses growing, but potentially getting to that year five landmark, if you like. And those four blockers were lack of funding, bad cash flow, lack of talent retention, and lack of sales.
Right.
But I argue if you address the lack of sales, you can actually address all of those other blockers as well. So if you've got a healthy top line, you don't necessarily have to go after finance. You can grow organically. Again, if you've got a healthy top line, you don't necessarily have to worry about those late payers because you can manage them and your cash flow better. And also, again, if you're generating those sales, you can afford to pay your talented staff at least the going rate to retain them. So you're right in that it's a bit simplistic, but it's certainly one of the major factors why only 50% of small businesses make it to year five.
But there's a lot more to look at even before you get that far down the line. Surely anyone considering ditching the safety net of leaving a current employer must surely undertake some pretty in-depth market research to establish the potential of the planned venture. And that must include establishing a list of potential customers, the likely existing competition, and that's even before estimating the likely launch and ongoing costs and available finance. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, there needs to be a lot of hard preparation done before you potentially push out on your own, because, once you do that, it's all down to you. So, I mean, the first thing certainly you need is a business plan.
Right.
Within that business plan, there should be a sales and marketing section. And I would go one stage further and I would develop that section into a separate standalone plan, a separate standalone sales and marketing plan. But you're right, you do need to do the research on your potential customers, your market. You need to do your research on your competition, your market conditions. What are the trends that are happening in your market? Also, what your customers' buying preferences are as well, because they change. So you do need to be on it when it comes to all of those elements of potentially a business ownership, generating sales and getting hold of the right sort of customer.
Now, in your book, you seem to suggest that anyone launching out actually needs to be prepared to fail unless you've got a deep pocket. Surely you can't work on that basis. And if you plan to fail, you probably will, won't you?
Yeah, it's that's kind of the section in the book there is all about it's taking off those rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah.
It's having a more pragmatic approach to business ownership. And any seasoned business owner will tell you that they've had many failures along their way. And in fact, you have those failures, those micro-failures on a daily basis. It could be that, you know, you were looking to hire the perfect candidate and they've decided to take a job offer elsewhere. It could be that you were looking to land a deal that you thought was a certainty, a brand new customer, they've decided not to go with you. So you have those micro failures all the way through on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And they're actually essential for keeping you grounded, but also building up your resilience so that when you do get those knockbacks, you're able to pick yourself up straight away and get on with it. Because if you do let those knockbacks affect you, then you know, it puts yourself out of kilter with the rest of your how you do business. It puts you in the wrong frame of mind, and it's more about being pragmatic. I think Benjamin Franklin once said failing to plan is planning to fail.
Yes.
So you do need to plan, but you need to be aware of what those potential failures will be so that you can build in some mitigation, some risk adverse challenges to help you get around those.
Now, you mentioned at the outset there that it was important to get the sales so that you've got that money coming in to retain what you said your staff, but surely most people actually won't have actually taken on any staff when they first start up. They're going to go out there and try and get some business and get the thing going before they could even think about taking on staff.
Again, it's a very fair point. Most people, when they start off their business, it's either themselves, they're a homepreneur, solopreneur, maybe they're a partnership. And again, the vast majority of those people probably won't have had any formal sales training or ever been in a fixed sales role themselves. So they are kind of doing sales and learning on the job and doing it in an ad hoc manner. And that sometimes means you get ad hoc results, which can be a struggle for you. But quite often, the very first person you do employ in your business will be a salesperson. Or these days, you can actually outsource your sales to sales agents, to telemarketing agencies, etc., or certain elements of how you do your sales. So there are means and ways of getting other people to help you with your sales. And DOES, does or does, is delegate, outsource, employ somebody. Those are the kind of the options you can look at when you're looking to help get people with your, help you with your sales.
Now, accepting that there are a huge number of different kinds of businesses out there, would I be right in saying that there is no one-size-fits-all solution? After all, there's a world of difference between marketing a manufactured product or a service, isn't there? Or am I totally wrong on that?
I think you're right to a major part. I mean, how you sell something, the sales cycle, how long it takes to engage with somebody and sell that person, that buyer, your product or service. Your sales cycle can be very different. Your product or service can be seasonal, it can be transactional, it can be one-off. It could be you have to build and nurture a relationship. It's based around your selling, it's based around relationship selling. So all of that is very, very different, and that can change from sector to sector to company, certainly. But the basic premise is still the same. It's a transaction between a buyer and a seller, and you're helping that buyer, if you're the seller, meet a need or a want. It's as simple as that. And in sales, again, it breaks down into three very simple stages: pre-sale, the sale, and the after-sale. So your pre-sale is the marketing activity that's prior to the transaction. The transaction is obviously converting the customer and bringing and onboarding them. And then your after-sale, that's all about the retention and growing that customer spend and obviously turning them into an advocate so they then start referring business your way.
Right, well, let's move on to the sales procedure itself. Now, accepting first off that sales is not a dirty word, which it most certainly is not, assuming that we've identified a potential customer, or better still, a whole host of them, hopefully you've done your homework and you either know what they're likely to be looking for, unless this is the purpose of the initial contact. What then?
Yeah, again, there's a process you can follow. It's around five sort of stages. So it's finding, engaging, nurturing, converting, and retaining a customer. So once you've found them, you then engage them, which is the bit that you're talking about. And then once you've engaged them, you've got to nurture that relationship.
Sure.
You've then got to communicate, not necessarily the features and products of your service these days, because customers now are very educated and sophisticated. They quite often know your product or service inside out. They've researched it to death.
Well, not if you're new.
Well, if you're new, yeah, I mean, what, the customer's new?
No, you as the entrepreneur, it's your business, your new business,
yeah.
So they won't know anything about you.
Yeah, I mean, normally you would have a website up and running before you start pushing out and trying to get hold of customers. You might have a profile on social media. So there'll be places for that prospective client to go and kind of suss you out. And that's what they want to do now. I mean, even business to business, B2B buyers, they think like a consumer and they want what's called social proof. Mm-hmm. They want to check out your reviews, your case studies, your business endorsements on your social media profiles.
But if you're new, you won't have any reviews.
But again,
unless you've written them yourself.
Yeah, no, but you would potentially have them from different roles or from different companies. And again, when you're pushing out on your own, you kind of want to front load your profiles with a bit of experience that may not be immediate, but still related to what you're doing. So when I started out my business 5 or 6 years ago, obviously I had a career in sales for 25 years before that. So I had a lot of information in my mm-hmm. profile about my experience, the businesses I'd worked with, the sectors I'd worked within. So you can sort of load that information there to help provide a client with some of that proof that they're looking for.
Okay, let's jump on and assume that we've had a successful sale. But unfortunately, we all know that things can and do go wrong, often due to circumstances outside our control. What damage control steps should we take?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Things can go Pete Tong, as they say.
Very much so.
If you've done your research and you've followed a process, a sales process, mm-hmm. then normally you will mitigate the chance of things going wrong at the end. Sometimes buyers can get what's called buyer's remorse. They get cold feet, they pull out, and then they cancel the order or they decide not to go with you. And more often than not, it's because they haven't fully understand whether your product or service is right for them, so you haven't perhaps communicated that well enough in the process. But what you can do is when you're engaging the client and you're taking them through and converting that sale, you can test them to see if they're on board with what you're doing and whether they feel it's right for you. So you can, what they call test close, so you can suggest to the client, so can you see how this might solve your problem and meet your need, Mr. Customer? And then obviously if you get an affirmative, then you kind of know that you're doing the right things and hopefully you're going to get that yes by the end of it. But a lot of small business owners, they fail by not asking for the order. They've done all the hard work,
yes.
They've got through the steps of the sale, and now the customer's potentially ready to buy. You just have to ask the customer to say, shall we do the paperwork now or whatever?
Yeah.
But sometimes there's that mental block where people just haven't got the courage to ask for the order, and that's when things can fizzle out, go cold, and then go Pete Tong.
Well, I was really thinking in terms of a service failure that might be not even your service, but somebody you've had, quite often it goes down the line somewhere, and something has gone wrong all the way down the line, and it's messed up the service, an end product or service that you're trying to sell to this company. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, again, that certainly can happen. If you've got third parties involved in the process, maybe it's delivering the product, etc. I mean, I was in courier sales for a number of years, so
yeah.
I know exactly what can happen with your consignment.
Yes.
It can either go missing or it turns up not quite in the state that you were hoping for it to be in. So again, doing vetting, making sure that if you're involving any third parties or partners in your sales offering, you do that vetting and you keep on top of them. Make sure that you meet with them, and then if there's any problems, you communicate those problems early doors to try and nip any regular problem featuring. So, but you've got to accept things are outside of your control, and this goes back to the failure bit, is don't get vexed and hung up about things that are outside of your control. Just worry about what's in your control, and then maybe do a bit of business continuity planning around what's in your control so that you can mitigate some of those risks and maybe have an answer to some of those challenges as and when they come your way.
And of course, honesty is always the best policy. Own up, something went wrong. Yeah, okay, it happens.
Yeah.
Now we pick up the pieces.
Yeah, you'll be found out. You've just got to, and people will appreciate you having that honest approach. And if you offer a solution at the end of that as well, then people will be much more encouraged to stay with you and transact with you again. And we all, things happen. People realise that. People make mistakes. So as long as you own up, be frank about that. But as I said, more importantly, offer a solution.
Now, there are numerous sales techniques out there, and there's no way we can explore all of them today, but perhaps you'd like to list just a few obvious pointers.
All right. There's sales methodologies out there, which are kind of mini steps of the sale. Right. So the one that a lot of consultative type businesses use is insight selling.
Right.
So this is more now about offering your potential clients some insight into their purchase, which they hadn't considered or perceived before. So this isn't about telling them about the features and products of the service. It's more about saying, have you considered this alternative product or service, which actually would probably service your need much better? Uh-huh. Or so it's offering them a bit of insight and that will help differentiate you from the bog standard features and the features type of salespeople that are out there. So that's one methodology. Transactional selling is getting the sale done quickly because the customer's got that urgent need, so you want to facilitate that purchase as quickly and as easily as possible. Relationship selling, customer-centric selling, that's really important when you're buying or you're selling something that takes a while. The sales cycle is quite long, so you've got to nurture a bit of a relationship with the buyer so that they're fully secure at the end of the 6-12 months or however sure. long it takes to buy that product or service. Transactional selling, as I said, I've mentioned. Conversational selling, chatbots. Mm-hmm. They started off using chatbots just for customer service issues. Now they're using chatbots for actually selling. So there are lots of different sales methodologies out there, and kind of the best way to do is build your own hybrid methodology by borrowing bits that you're comfortable with that work well for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, thanks for all that, Paul, and perhaps I could offer one more piece of advice. Grab yourself a copy of Paul's book, Entrepreneurial Sales. It'll only set you back a mere £11.99, and then keep it by you. That way you'll always have an expert on hand to help you overcome all manner of situations. And I think we should also mention that Paul's a trainer in his own right. Okay, what's all that about?
Training probably takes up about half of what I do my work. So I train, I do workshops locally. I'm training at The Hive, which is a co-working space in Southend tomorrow. Uh-huh. I train at City Business Library up in London, CME, which is the Centre for Engineering and Manufacturing Excellence, and various other venues in and around London and the South East. And I do one-to-one training. And I've got 11 online training courses as well for those that are on a budget and they want some cost-effective, bite-sized training on demand, as it were. So.
And you've also done something with Brentwood Business Showcase last year.
Yeah. I did some training with the exhibitors there. I've got a little workshop on the 20 sins of exhibiting and showcasing. So, it was all about maximising your return on investment if you're exhibiting at a show and making sure that you stands out literally from all of your competitors there. So I did a little workshop with some of the exhibitors for the showcase last year. Yeah.
Well, there you are then, and you can quite literally get Paul alongside you to help you. Why not just run through your contact details, Paul?
Yeah, okay. So I've got a website, pdtsalesconsultancy.co.uk. You'll find me on LinkedIn. I'm normally the highest ranked Paul Durrant, so you'll see my photograph there. I'm also on Twitter as well. Those are the main platforms that I use there. And you can email me on info@pdtsalesconsultancy.co.uk.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thanks very much indeed for all that, Paul. Hopefully, people now have a good chance of not being one of the 380,000 people. Was it 338,000 companies that go skew with after 5 years?
Yeah. Well, preparation, that will help you certainly. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much indeed.